The following is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900 CHML.
We are planning our financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Gary Hogan are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Good morning, gentlemen. Good to see you all this morning.
Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Gary. And here we are into the early stages of 2023. There's all sorts of chat about possibly interest rates going up. The recession word keeps coming around again. And now the stock market seems to be on a little bit of a run here. Where are we so early in this year?
Yeah, what a mixed bag of data you just announced there, Scott. You know, yes, interest rates, there's a good chance they may go up again. We're going to be finding out on the 25th of this month. On the same token, you know, the R word keeps raising its head. It started off late in last year and actually a good part of last year. They said, oh, it won't happen. It will happen. Conflicting information there. And then all of a sudden, we ended last year on a fairly okay note, but it's continued right into this year. It was a negative year last year, by the way, in all respects. The U.S. market's down. Every stock market was negative. And for that matter, the bond market was also down in general. So everything is kind of negative. But coming into this new year, it's like the opposite of last year. Last year, everything started off right out of the gates negative. And this year, we've had like a good run of a good return. And it's up about, say, 4 to 5% in the first couple of weeks in January. So, you know, it's recovered a lot of what it lost in 2022. So with this mixed bag, you think, how can the market be going up and yet they're talking about recession? And it's kind of funny there, Gary. I think that's what you're going to be talking about.
Yeah, this whole topic, thanks, Don, this whole topic about whether we're going to see a recession or whether we're in one and so on, the simple answer is no one knows for sure. It's not definitive. But, you know, to your point about last year versus this year, where we're starting from, I mean, when we look at where we are in January of 2023, we're in much better shape than we were January 22 because we came off a banner year with the markets. Here we are now, bond yields are rising, markets are moving forward. So if we're looking at sort of square one for 2023, we certainly are in better shape, or at least it bodes more favorably for the rest of the year, but we'll have to see. But this whole issue about the recession, it's one of the most contested topics throughout the network of economists, you know, across the country. And depending what you read, depending what you hear, depending what day of the week it is, that it's, you know, it's just a floating topic in terms of what may happen. There was a comprehensive analysis of the economy that was just released by the Canadian Federation of Independent Businesses. And they concluded that the answer to the question continues to be uncertain.
And they get paid for that.
Yeah. So I think what I want to talk about in the time we have is just, you know, what are the things that suggest we might, what are the things that are working counter to that? So in this report, they did, however, indicate that there's some signs that a recession could be avoided, at least for now. So, you know, they've got, you know, each foot on either side of the line here. But that's understandable because, again, there's so many variables that come into play, so many moving parts. But they estimated the last 3 months of 2022 was 1.2% annualized with and then the growth so far this year is, and we're talking about the economy, is 0.6. So the final numbers are coming out anytime now, and they may be here by now. We haven't had a chance to check to sort of examine the Q4 of last year.
But Gary, in general, the word recession, it seems like just a bad word, but I guess, you know, the definition is just two negative quarters of the economy.
Consecutive quarters, and that's mm-hmm. all it is. So we're not seeing that. The economy is still growing. And the markets are moving forward. And, you know, again, we touched on the fact that the markets aren't necessarily don't work in concert with whether or not we're going to have a recession. And, you know, that's important to understand, too. Some of their forecasts, this organization's forecasts are that the slowdown of our economy should continue for Q1. So they're not going out too far. and without contracting. And if that happens, then their position was that, you know, that could suggest that a recession is avoidable. But when you're only going out one quarter in terms of your projections, that's just not sufficient because, yeah, again, as we said earlier, there's so many things to factor in. Their inflation forecast is for the consumer price index to lower to 5.7 overall. And let's remember, too, that it was over 8%, which we talked about on the show many times back in July. That was sort of the peak. And
we're finding both the Canadian and the pretty much worldwide, but certainly North America, the inflation rates have dropped drastically from their highs already.
Right, right. And this issue with inflation, if it continues to drop, then that obviously is going to be one of the considerations that the Bank of Canada is going to factor into, you know, whatever decisions that they're going to make. And it's probably fair to say that, you know, all of this has to be worked through in real time, because every week things are adjusting, the numbers that are coming in are changing, and so on. So this isn't something that that is definite at this point in time whether we're going to see one. We may likely see one January 25th, but we really don't know. And if we do see one, it's suggested it might be a small increase. And
So why are we even questioning whether there will be or there won't be? In past recessions, I don't remember this discussion going on. Is it because there aren't enough convincing indicators to actually say there is going to be one? For example, the unemployment rate. I mean, it's historically low. Normally, it's the other way around during a recession. Yep. So why are we debating this so much?
That's a great question. And to your point specifically, it's because there are so many conflicting indicators.
Right. And particularly on employment, if anything, they're calling this a soft landing because we have full employment. And so that's a huge engine in the economy to have people working. So absolutely, Scott, on the same token, inflation is kind of, and the high interest rates are kind of choking the economy on purpose so that we don't have high inflation, which is one of the biggest cancers for retirement. So yeah, absolutely. There's so many different factors that are going into this, which makes it very difficult for anybody to kind of predict.
Yeah, and now the unemployment rate is actually, or the employment rate, that's the way we tend to look at things right now. It actually softened a little bit in the fourth quarter, very marginally. It softened a little bit in the fourth quarter. That could be time of year. That could be a whole host of things. But in the fourth quarter of last year, there were 665,000 jobs that went unfilled, according to Statistics Canada. And they were mainly, and it's no surprise, it was mainly in the personal services sector, construction, and hospitality. And we're still seeing that. All we have to do is, when we're driving around, is see all the job wanted ads that we see posted everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, so... So obviously encouraging business investment is very difficult. It's a very difficult thing now because of these fears of a potential recession, this big R word that's, you know, that's talked about on an ongoing basis, and you know, rising prices that we're experiencing across the board. It makes the planning landscape for so many companies very difficult right now. You know, there's still a lot of investment that's going on in technology, obviously, but a lot of that too is out of necessity to make up for the lack of people, the lack of workers. So, you know, it's kind of a catch 22. Some of the research data that they also came up with is said that businesses are willing to invest in technological solutions, but if and when the worker shortage situation remedies itself, then there won't be as much of a focus on that. That's one of the conclusions that they arrived at. So let's talk about the economists who do believe that we're going to experience a recession. So many are touting, as Don alluded to, and we've talked about before, a soft landing. In other words, it's not going to be a significant recession if that technical definition actually occurs of two successive negative quarters of growth. It appears now that a lot of economists had had underestimated the resilience of the economy. So once things start to darken in terms of the skies, it can cause a lot of pundits, a lot of analysts to look at things through a little different lens. And as a result, some of the forecasts, some of the conclusions that they draw are not as positive. And if we're hearing all the time that we're headed for a recession, and we're hearing about the cost of living, and we're bombarded, and we're experiencing that. I mean, we go grocery shopping, or we fill up our car, et cetera, et cetera. So when we're bombarded with that, then, you know, that does impact the situation for a lot of people.
You know, Gary, we were talking about indicators in just a second ago. Well, so much of this seems to be behavioral, in the sense that if people think there's a recession coming, well, we got to batten down the hatches and don't spend money, honey. I mean, yeah. How much of it is triggered by behavior?
Human behavior is such a driver with everything. And, you know, the pandemic, we can't rule out and this is what a lot of economists are talking about too, is that the pandemic contributed to such a unique environment where people were building up savings. You know, we weren't spending money. And then there was this pent up demand, because people decided that because they can't go out and do things, they're going to spend some of that money to purchase things. So of course, that, even though the supply chain issues were what they were, you know, certainly there was significant demand that really just made that a more difficult situation. So every time, something that was interesting that they reported on was that for those that believe that you know, that we're going to see a recession, is every time in the post Second World War era, the Bank of Canada has raised interest rates by 4 percentage points or more. When they have done that, there has been an economic downturn that followed in the form of a recession. So that's what some strict economists are looking at in terms of what they anticipate. So, you know, there's lots of positive signs that we may not experience one, or that we'll work through it, or if there is one, it's going to be mild. But then we also have a lot of things going on in the world, right? We have the friction in China, Iran, North Korea, and obviously the Russian invasion, all these geopolitical things that are still active and still ominous out there. So, you know, in terms of human behavior, as you mentioned, Scott, a lot of people's actions are affected by how they feel.
We are planning our financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Gary Hogan are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. Find out more at donfox.net. Call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Going to take a quick break here. We're coming back.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900 CHML.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Gary Hogan are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. Find out more at donfox.net. Call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. All right. If you're thinking or even looking off in the horizon about retiring, you should listen up. Four phases of retirement. Boy, this sounds like a long period of time, Don.
It is. Retirement is getting longer and longer. And you know what? It's behavioral. This is, and again, going back to what Gary's talking about with recession, human behavior, if they make a jump to saying, I'm going to invest based on what I hear, often emotion and money do not mix. In fact, I would say always emotion and money do not mix. So all this recession talk and negative talk that we're hearing is causing, you know, some very bad decisions. This is where you need to speak to your financial advisor to make sure they're putting on a right track, a great game plan, so that you're accomplishing your goals and, you know, putting away all that noise. So that's on the financial side, but this whole financial readiness. It's interesting. When you do a quiz, am I able to retire? Almost everything is about, can I afford to? And in fact, I would suggest most of the time our show is talking about how much you need to save. What are the tax ramifications? What's the best? How do you create that retirement paycheck for yourself? You know, and looking through your expenses and factoring inflation, and can I afford a new car X amount of times every so often? You know, and these are all financial things. But what we're finding is, and we had a for a long time called a financial a retirement readiness quiz, and it went through some of the soft issues. And this has come up in light in the last twice in the last week, actually, where somebody was talking about the retirement and how they had a very what they know somebody had a very poor retirement, not because they couldn't afford retirement. They just were lousy at being retired. And then another one said, was talking about another person that was a phenomenal retiree, had a fantastic retirement, and is still going strong. So again, it's what was the difference? It isn't money. And because we spent most of our time through school, extreme, you know, then into the workforce, trying to achieve goals. And retirement's like this abyss. So, you know, here we are, and there's a lot of people in this kind of quagmire right now. And because baby boomers are from 1946 to 1965, and back in 1966, they represented 41.7% of the population. So you can see this population like go through the snake, if you will. You see that big bulge going through, and it is now 24.9% of the population. And I am 60, I'm in 1963. So I'm at the tail end of the boom. And so you can say that, you safely save that the
Don,
vast majority Don, over 60.
Don, I'm with you. And change your language, fella. We are not baby boomers. We're the first Gen Xers, man. I mean, no.
when people came to the stats.
No. And we'll analyze the stats later. But you know, okay. people who came back from the war were still not having babies in the 60s. I mean, I think by that time the curve had already started to turn. But I'm just saying.
Oh yeah, it's kind of funny though. Our kids, Scott, are generally what they call millennials. And that is the next biggest group, which is about 21.5%. So we're like they're like the echo of the boom. And so, yeah, my son will always say, oh, you're just a boomer. And so it is what it is. But it is what's happening though, is a lot of people are nearing that retirement age, regardless of where we are, Scott. Okay. We can at least say that.
Okay.
But the life expectancy is going up. So you go back in 1950, life expectancy was 68. You retired 65, 3 years, and and that was it. You didn't have to plan long ways. In fact, you're probably in your honeymoon stage of retirement, and you never got out of it because it was only 3 years long. It's a long period. It's a whole new phase of your life, really. And so, what this I was reading was talking about the four major phases of retirement, and the first phase being that vacation or honeymoon stage. It lasts about 1 to 2 years. It has very little structure, as most vacations do. You're not normally doing what you were doing before. You get up in the morning, you think, okay, what am I up to today? And you really don't have a routine per se. It's almost like a dream. For those that have been working hard all their life, they love the fact that they have no routine. It's extremely selfish. You can do whatever you want, because I'm retired now. And it says, this is what I want to do, which might be nothing for that matter.
You know, a lot of recent retirees are using that now with their partners or their spouses by saying, hey, I got the day to myself. I can do whatever I want.
It's funny you bring up spouses, Gary. They get to spend a lot more time with their spouse. And yeah, that may be good or bad. I would suggest it's actually, to the most part, it's a big conflict because they both had routines together. And that throws out that out of the window too.
That was very delicate. That was very delicately put, by the way. You can tell this isn't your first rodeo.
Or in other words, one has marked their turf at home and the other one's in the way.
100%. I had a retiree said, I have been sent to the basement. Get out of my kitchen, get out of my living room, get out of my area. This has been my area for 30 years. And now your area is not here.
I didn't need to retire to get that.
And it's interesting. Like I said, this is phase one, and you get to do all your hobbies and that bucket list and the to-do list. You want to get around the house. It's that honeymoon stage, and it's great, but it gets old and you realize, okay, this is really very egotism of me. It's very selfish of me. It's like, it's a real, and some people never leave the stage, by the way. They love the stage. They'll stay there all the time. But generally speaking, most people go to phase two, which is this feeling of loss or feeling lost. because all of a sudden they've plunged into this abyss I mentioned, or like an you're really insignificant. You've dropped from the top. You might have had a great job and you're no longer adding value. You used to have that and you had this identity, particularly men. I would suggest more men go through this identity crisis from work than women do. But it is it's almost a somewhat of a depression they go through. In fact, it's in the top 10 traumas of people that people face in period in their life. Is this stage two of feeling, where am I now? And they have to repurpose. And because they were success driven, you know, you went through before school, you had sports, and in during school, you had sports, and probably also, but also school, and getting A's or getting B's or making it to college, and then continuing and going up the ladder and work and being a part of your identity. And this is who, you know, you are. And all of a sudden you drop from that to like, okay, what do I do now? And it's okay to have all those, you know, I'm going to golf every day. Great. But also there's a lot of your friendships. A lot of these are tied to work. And it's interesting, as much as you say, I'm going to keep in touch, you've started to lose some of the common ground that you used to talk about, you know, and so it's not the same. So you see, maybe you might keep a few of those friends, but, and you're used to doing the 1 and 5 year plans. Well, now you're getting up, you don't have any of these. So as you mentioned, invading your spouse's space, this is, you know, often you'll see a lot of people going through spouse therapy, okay, during this time and trying to get through that.
It sounds like phase two is the time when we go to Walmart.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, there's unavoidable losses in phase two. You lose structure. You lose your identity. You lose relationships from work mainly. You lose a sense of power that you might have had at work. And you somewhat lose your sense of purpose. You go through all five of these. And so it's a tough stage. And you got to come out of this. Or what ends up happening often is there is people start to get into addiction issues, alcohol, drug abuse, what have you. And they just seek help. So it's this feeling of it's a quagmire, really is. So then what do? Thank God you get to stage three, or perhaps you just go back to stage one and start traveling again and playing golf. One of the two. Okay. But stage three is trial and error. You think, okay, how can I start to contribute again? What am I missing? What do I need? What would make me feel good? And you start to look for options and you start saying, okay, I'm going to try this. And the nice thing about this, you're financially fine. You've gone through all the finances. You're all good. Your financial planner says, okay, you can retire. But this is why I often talk to people. I have one gentleman I talk to all the time. He asks me, Don, can I retire yet? And I often just say, no, you can't. He financially is fine, but he cannot retire. He's getting so much enjoyment of what he's doing right now. He has to find another avenue to take place so that will fulfill him again. And he's having a ball doing what he's doing. So it is more than simply the money. It's, you know what? And we often talk about, Gary, there's a big difference from, you know, retirement and financial independence. You know, being financially independent allows you to do whatever you want, which might be retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It may be retirement. It may not be. And there's a lot of people that work into their, you know, 70s, 80s, and they found so much fulfillment on it. It's not really work because they love to do what they're doing. So in phase three, you try it and move on. I would suggest, I have one friend of mine that is, I say, the best retiree I know. He retired, he had a high, you know, a very tough job, a lot of stress, went on and started doing all the projects and traveling, doing stage one. Then on to stage two, trying to figure out what he's going to do. And it didn't last long because he went on to stage three quickly and says, you know what? I'm going to be a postman. Tried that. Lasted like 2 weeks, got his first check, says, not for me. On to something else. He needed to find another job, even though he didn't need the money, he wanted to do something.
So, and Don, what you're saying is, sorry, Don, what yeah. you're saying, though, is retirement planning is not just about the finances, of course. Before people retire, a lot of thought really should go into what is it going to look like in terms of my lifestyle, the yeah. things that are going to interest me, motivate me, and so on.
100%. Yeah, you think more than just the money. And I think most don't. And I know, Gary, you know, we all talk about in our meetings about a lot more than money. This is going on, okay, what's your day going to look like? How are you going to feel? You know, it's nice to say, okay, what was your dream goal? It might be vacationing, it might be whatever it is. But if you have to golf every day, golf used to be fun, but now it's a chore because it's a routine. And that might still be fun, but you know what? I find out there's some very serious retirees that golf, they're taking too much pressure on the golf game because they're basically moved work to golf.
Right.
Okay. So this is stage three, is trial and error. And really at the end of the day, the brain is set to achieve things. It's a very efficient machine. It's like a bicycle. You know, when it's moving fast, it's very efficient, gets there quickly. But when it starts to move slowly, it becomes harder to steer. And eventually, if you stop a bike, it just falls. You can't keep riding. It just falls. So that's kind of the analogy. Now, stage four, this is the good one, though. This is where you reinvent. And I had one client call it refocusment. He didn't say, I didn't go into retirement. I went into refocusment. And he changed everything. This is a doctor client of mine. And these people are the happiest people there are as far as retiring. Many don't even hit stage four. They just keep going back to stage one and then back into stage three and then back into stage one. This is important to go. If you can get to this stage, this is where you really have to do a little introspection. Take a look what makes you tick. What is your unique ability? What's your skill set? In fact, ask your friends what your unique ability is. They may have a better idea than you do. And then you look at, so what are your high points before retirement? What were the things that you say, these are the best points of my life, and what were they? And then try to find that thread between your unique ability and what got you to these highest points of your life. And you may actually find, okay, here's an option for me. You know, a Harvard study of 15,000 retirees, they found that the most unhappiest retirees had not gone on to anything productive other than pleasing themselves. Meaning they never got out of stage one. They just kept doing things that were selfish and they never were that happy. So at the end of the day, it's finding this unique ability, find that passion, and then find what really makes a difference. You know, and then you look at it, so there's a sweet spot where you can add some value. And this is, you know, and again, it might be volunteering. It might be working part-time. It might be getting physically fit. In fact, I would say that most people that go that route particularly are happier. And if I look at my retiree friend, he went one day a week, he volunteers, 3 days a week, he's working at another job. He loves it, actually. They keep offering more hours. He said, nope, I'm good. Oh, I can get your management job. Nope, I'm good. You know, he just enjoys what he's doing. He's not there for the money. And he's lost some weight. He's a lot more physical. He's riding a bike a few days a week and in fitness classes, having a ball. And I think what a trifecta of success, because at the end of the day, you're a successful retirement may not be how much money you left to your kids. It's how happy you are during that stage of life.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Gary Hogan are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. We're going to take a quick break here. We're coming right back.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900 CHML.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Gary Hogan are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. DonFox.net to find out more. Call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Boy, you know, I'm thinking as we bring in this next segment, how there's just so many trains of thought we seem to be heading into this new year, whether it's inflation or recession. But your next segment, what the heck is with housing? I mean,
yeah,
there's another issue.
And what the heck is going on with the housing market, right? And why? But I think the best way to kind of frame that is, you know, the old saying, everything that's old is new again. And we've been through this before. You know, people who have experienced home ownership over the years have certainly been through this type of thing before. So, you know, let's start with, so Royal LePage put out a report and they said that the median, I'm going to say first that they said the median price of a home in Canada in the fourth quarter of 2022 resulted in that average, that median price, I should say, resulted in the first year-over-year decline since the end of 2008. And we all know what happened in 2007, 2008, and into Q1 of 2009. So that shouldn't really come as any real shock. Because that, of course, was that period of time where we had that quote and unquote financial crisis. So the median price across the country in Q4 of 2022 was about $750,000. Now, and that was about 3% down from the end of 2021. Now, what we have to, of course, realize is that our areas here, you know, the GTA, the Greater Hamilton area, into Niagara and so on, the Golden Horseshoe, our average or median prices are much higher. They have been much higher. But that was a national study that they looked at. Now, it's interesting to point out that this year-over-year drop that we've experienced, when you actually break it down, single-family detached homes was a drop of 3.7. Condominiums, and this may surprise us and our listeners, of course, but condominiums actually increased in value by 1.4%. So is that or was that because of the demand that took place, you know, over the last couple of years? It's really, for me, it's really hard to explain why that was the case, but condominiums went up in value.
Well, I think maybe they didn't actually do very well during the pandemic.
Right. That's true.
People were moving out of the city centers and moving out into the outskirts.
So maybe people moving back in, going back to work. That's
And creating affordability.
Right. So that I thought that was an interesting point. So this year-over-year decline that we've experienced now, first since 2008, we should realize too, to put things in perspective, because perspective is always so important, right? That the 2019 to 2020 year end, and then the following year, the values of homes, the median values of homes were higher than pre-pandemic levels to the tune of 17% and 19%. So when we think about what's happened with housing prices, when they have gone down so much in the past number of months, the latter half of 2022, we have to realize, and again, this is what I was getting at before with people who have experienced the housing market for some time, the values before the pandemic were lower, but it doesn't feel that way. It feels like we're on this fast train going downwards, which isn't really the case. Now the activity levels are what the main thing or the main reason why things have changed is because they're, you know, activity's down sharply, right? So what we experienced during the pandemic was this eruption of buying and you know, bidding wars and all that activity, the lack of being able to do your due diligence when you were interested in buying a home, basically lining up and having these blind auctions kind of thing. So
panic buying.
Yeah. So we're and overinflated prices, right? So we're past that. Now we're at a time where people are able to do their due diligence. And a lot of people are just one of the reasons that activity is where it is right now, obviously, because people are concerned about rising inflation and interest rates and so on. That's obvious. But also too, people are saying, well, I'm going to wait and see what happens with this housing market. Is it going to go down more? So I'm not going to make any moves until things seem to settle a little bit. So, you know, and we're also past the point now where so many deals fell apart, where people through that panic buying, people committed to something and then realized Oh my God, I've overpaid by $200,000 for this. Yes. I'm trying to get out of it, sort of thing.
And there was an article earlier on this week about condo buyers who are walking away before the building's even complete.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And builders coming and saying, yes, that was 2 years ago that you paid your deposits and so on, but now it's $100,000 more.
Yeah.
Right. And that's happening too. So there's a shortage of homes on the market, and we'll see where that sort of falls out over time. But people are taking their time. It's a healthier market now. It was a very unhealthy market during the pandemic. So at some point we're going to see interest rates stabilize. And possibly down the road drop. And again, that will be another different chapter of what happens with the process of home buying.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Gary Hogan are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Going to take a quick break here. We're coming right back.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900 CHML.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Gary Hogan are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Going to end off today's show with understanding how much RSP room you've got.
Yes, thanks, Scott. And yes, it's RSP season. We're into it now. And it's kind of interesting. It used to be kind of straightforward way, way back. You knew how much RSP room you had, but now it's been cumulative for a long period of time now. And so your RSP room is actually, the best way to find it is look at your notice of assessment. It's got all the data. As far as the maximums going, for those that want to not only look after their 22 RSP, they're looking at their 23 RSP limit. So some people like to contribute the max right at the beginning. And it makes a lot of sense because they get that much more compounding. You got the whole year of growth. And after a negative year like last year in terms of the investments, it may be a good time to double up right now, do this year's and last year's. But last year's limit is 18% up to $29,210. Well, that means you need to make $162,277 just to make that limit. And next year, our 23's limit is actually $30,780. It's a 5.4% increase. Again, you now need to make $171,000 to create that limit. So that's why it's so difficult. It's 18% of this, but it goes further than that. So if you look at your notice of assessment, the first line says RSP deduction limit for 2021. And let's say it was 36,000. Well, then you look at, okay, minus the contribution you made. And let's say you maxed it right out. You put in the 36,000. So this is probably why you got a nice refund last year, perhaps. So then you look at, okay, 18% of my 21 income to a maximum of 29,210, which is the number I mentioned. And in this particular one I'm looking at, that their income worked out to, they could put in 19,601. So there, a lot of people would say, okay, that's good. That's what I can put into my RSP. Oh, wait a minute. Slow those guns down a bit here. You now have to look at this 2021 pension adjustment. Well, what the heck is that? Well, this pension adjustment is what you or your employer has put into your pension. Now, this is where quite often I'm talking to clients, and I like to see their work benefit book and say, okay, do you have a group RSP? Okay, yeah, and my company matches it. Well, are they matching the group RSP or are they matching into a separate category called a pension, which might be a defined contribution pension plan? And whatever goes into that pension adds to your pension adjustment, which comes up the following year. It doesn't affect how much you put into your RSPs this year. So again, this is why this notice of assessment is so important. In fact, in this particular case, the one I'm looking at right now, her contributions are going to a pension and they're being matched by the employer also putting it into a pension. So it's quite, you know, and there's very, you know, everybody's got a different game. I know just last week I saw the exact opposite. Their contribution was going to a group RSP. The employer's was going to a group RSP, which really is difficult to track because you have to know that amount before you contribute with your financial advisor, because you may end up adding too much. So in this case, the pension adjustment was $9,422. Okay, well, that means that they have a deduction limit of $10,180 in this example I'm looking at right now. And say, okay, perfect, I can put in $10,180. And this is where I find a lot of people have made mistakes. They simply look at their RSP deduction limit for $10,180 and that's it, case closed. Again, if your financial planner is not asking for your notice of assessment and your tax return, you may be making a lot of mistakes. Because that, for me, I feel like I'm going blind in an appointment without that information. In this particular case, this client had unused RSP contributions reported and available for deduction in 22 of $10,000. What that means is this person had put in an additional $10,000 and didn't claim it because they already claimed all they could the previous year. And that probably was done in the first 60 days of the year where you can use it for 1 year or going forward. And so even though it said the RSP deduction limit was $10,180, they've already put in $10,000 they didn't claim. They only have RSP room of $180. So extremely important to bring out the notice of assessment, because the next line says available contribution room for 22 was $180. Okay, so it actually says that, but it's that one line that messes a lot of people up because they don't realize that when you put money into an RSP, you don't have to claim it. In fact, we talk about many times of monitoring your tax brackets and making sure that you're getting the best bang for your buck. So Gary and I will often go, okay, well, let's bring your income down and get it out of that 43.41% tax bracket. So we're going to bring your income in 22 to $100,393. And so we'll just get it to that level so that you're not using deductions at lower brackets. And so this is quite obvious why we postpone some of this RSP room.
And Don, to your point about notices of assessment, there are a lot of people, they get through the exhaustion of tax season and so on. They get their notice of assessment, they slap that piece of paper in with their records, and that's it. It's put away, it's over. But to your point, yes, it's so important to utilize that going forward.
And so every listener out there, grab that notice assessment, grab the tax return, and make sure you bring it to your financial planner to make sure they're giving you the best advice.
We have been planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Gary Hogan have been here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Another award-winning show, gentlemen. Thanks so much for the time. We'll chat next week.
The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900CHML.
I'm not just a pawn in this game.
3 nights a week on Global.
They're putting targets on their back. Massive.
Drama.
I guess you could say I'm in a showman.
They're just so in love and so annoying. Enough.
Betrayal.
The guy just put up his best friend now.
And plot twists.
What is happening right now?
You'll never see coming.
If you're coming for me,
this is perfect.
I'm coming for you then.
It'll be a battle.
Like, it'll be war.
Big Brother Canada. All new Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Sundays on Global. Stream on Stack TV.